At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from two technology experts. And that's not just what we call ourselves, it's what our moms tell people when they try to explain the concept of CCRP. It's very difficult, but that's why we're here. I'm your host, Luke.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way.
Ha ha.
Good one.
That's the laugh or two.
That was two laughs.
We're done.
Well, you could debate it.
So, I suppose it depends on if your definition is two individual laughs or two instances of laughter.
Yeah, maybe we should take a note to be more clear about that.
We really should, because, I mean, we put this all in full legally binding verbiage for a reason. And so it's our job to make sure that we're closing loopholes and keeping on top of things. Uh-oh, wait. Speaking of keeping on top of things, Ethan in the chat here says, remind me again, Luke, what CCRP means. Guys, we have been over this. And fortunately, I have some visual graphic elements to help you remember.
Oh boy, it's bad.
Folks, this is if we're in a college course here, you really should know this one because it's going to be on the exam. Credibility, corroboration, repetition. Whoops, I hit it again. Proximity. All right? Credibility, corroboration, repetition, proximity. That is your tool set for life. Anything in life you can solve with CCRP.
That's true. What happens if your car breaks down? How do you solve that?
Well, you need to find out if your car breaks down, then you want to find out what the best mechanic to fix it would be. So you would want to find out the credentials of the mechanic. You would want to find other people corroborating that this mechanic is sound. And you would want to see that repeatedly and in a short span of time. Boom. CCRP has saved your life.
There you go. I found my mechanic and my car is now fixed. Thanks, Luke.
Exactly.
Thanks, Dark Mode.
Thanks. No, not. Don't thank me. Thanks, CCRP.
Wow. That's the slogan right there.
That's my slogan.
Wow. Amazing.
Oh no, people don't like that we have a lower third graphic. Well, guess what? This is what we have to do in order to get the word out there. Oh, people are noticing that my Lemonade insurance advertisements are, quote, flooding YouTube. This is a totally random tangent, but I just thought that was funny because I believe they just started running those today. And I can actually tell you that they are not, in fact, flooding YouTube because they have been used a total of 2,395 times. So if you've seen one, you're one of the lucky few.
That's 2,000. You're saying 2,000 people have been shown an ad with you in it.
Right. Well, at least that's what I presume. The way that this all works is sometimes, as a part of a brand deal, the company can pay extra to be able to use, your branded segment as mid-rolls for, other videos. So you might be watching a video on someone else's channel and your like skippable ad is this guy.
Luke Miani jump scare.
Yeah, exactly. You thought you could get away from me? You thought, oh, Luke Miani was... Surely Luke Miani's going to stay on his own channel. No, I'm everywhere. I'm in your walls.
Oh, geez. See, this is why I have YouTube Premium. So I, it's like protection from you. Keeps you out of other people's videos, you know?
Absolutely. It keeps me in my box. I mean, that YouTube Premium is a Luke Miani exorcist.
Yeah, there you go. That's, if you ever needed a reason to get YouTube Premium, there it is right there.
Absolutely. In fact, I wonder if I can go and generate a Luke Miani ad on a Luke Miani video by clicking on it. Oh, all right. I'm on my logged out account here, so I'm getting skippable ads. My first one was StreamYard, which we're currently nice. Using.
Relevant.
Oh, and the second one just didn't load, so I don't know what that would have been. That's kind of, I mean, gosh, they really do learn you pretty quick, don't they? I'm not even signed in, and they already know this guy wants StreamYard.
Yep.
All right, let's get back on track here. I apologize for deviating here. My mind is awash. It's been a 24-hour day. Who knows what's going on?
It's understandable.
Thank you for bearing with me. So we should address the title of the video, I think. What the heck? Are we getting a WWDC announcement or not?
I sure hope so, for multiple reasons.
Many very valid reasons. More even than you might think.
Exactly.
But what I hope more than anything is that WWDC is on June 5th for no particular reason.
I also hope so. I feel like that's a good, that's like an all-time like classic dub date, you know? It's like, if there's ever going to be a date to have it, it's got to be that.
June 5th is like, you know, someone asks you, what are you doing on June 5th? And in the back of your mind, you're thinking,
exactly. They should rename. They should make that like a national holiday. Should call it like Dub Dub Day.
Ooh, that's good. Triple D. That's got like a good ring to it. I like that. We should use that.
Yeah, they could shorten it to D-Day.
So, yeah, even better. That's an unused acronym / nickname. They could just call it June 5th is D-Day, everyone.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone will know it means Dub Dub, as in WWDC, as in the Worldwide Developer Conference from Apple. Everyone will know that.
Exactly. And the day that contains
it. Everyone knows that.
It's great. So I want to find here a list of all WWDCs. When are they always held? Because unlike some of their other events, which we talked about last week, WWDC has been a very regular thing for a pretty long time, I would say. If you go all the way back to 1989, they actually used to be in May. Did you know that?
I did not. Was this actually called like WWDC, or was this like Macworld back in the day?
No. Well, so Macworld was held in January.
Okay.
And that was technically, I believe, that was not actually an Apple thing. Macworld was technically like a third-party thing that was for like lots of developers and like third-party OEMs and like a bunch of stuff. But then Apple would always have a keynote at Macworld.
I see.
It was like officially endorsed, but I don't think technically first party, essentially. But WWDC has been around since what year? Guess.
Did you just say it?
I said a year, but not the
first.
What
year did you say? 1989?
Well, I'm not going to tell
you.
See,
I have zero memory. It's all in one ear, out the other.
There you go.
I don't know. Didn't you say, like, I think you said like 89, right? And you're saying that may or may not be the first year. So was it in the 80s? Mid 80s?
I don't know. When do you think it was?
Ethan here in the chat says 84. I feel like that's not a bad guess. I'll go with that.
All right. Well, you guys are close. You and Ethan were 1 year off. 1983 was the first WWDC, which actually means this year will be the 40th anniversary of WWDC.
That is much older than I thought.
Same. I didn't know this until just now when I pulled up the Wikipedia article. But if we go all the way back through the, for whatever reason, they don't have dates for 1983 through 1988. But 1989, they do. And that's May 8th. Okay. And in fact, it was held in May all the way until 2003. And that's when they switched to June.
Interesting.
Exactly. Okay. So now we're in, we actually have one outlier. Since 2003, 20 years, there has only been one WWDC that was not held in June, and that was in 2006, where it was inexplicably in August.
Huh.
Yeah, don't know why. That was also the year of the Intel transition, though, so maybe there was like a little bit of a delay or something. And they had to bump it a month.
That makes sense.
That could be it. So, if we now we have this subset, right? We've got 20 years of June WWDCs. When in June are they? Well, let's go through it. Back to 2003, it was June 23rd. 2004, it was June 28th. But then we get into a pattern. 2005, June 6th. 2007, June 11th. 2008, June 9. 2009, June 8. 2010, June 7. 2011, June 6. 2012, June 11. 2013, June 10. 2014, June 2. 2015, June 8. And then June 13, June 5, June 4, June 3. 2020, it was also late June. 2020, it was June 22nd. And then 7th and 6th. So, since I think we've got a pretty clear pattern, which is the first full week of June. I believe all of those are Mondays as well.
That would make sense, yeah.
Let's pick a random date. June 9th, 2008. What day of the week was June 9th, 2008? Day of week. Monday. Whoa. Shocker. So if we use this logic, June 5th sounds like D-Day.
That's right.
I'm excited.
It's a lot of history. That is interesting because I didn't realize how old it was, and I didn't realize that there were, I guess, a couple of outliers. There was the 2006, which was a big outlier. 2020, minor outlier. Obviously, you know, COVID plus right. Apple Silicon, whatever. You could probably explain that away. But all these other years, they've been early June. Very, very, very close together. It's maybe that, like, first or second Monday of June. So I'm hoping that it happens again because, why wouldn't it?
Why wouldn't it, right? If someone were to plan something around it, one would have a pretty concrete idea of when it's going
to
happen.
Right, and if Apple were to, like, switch it up for some reason, that would severely mess up those plans.
I agree. And unfairly, it would do that.
Right, that would be very unfair, Apple. I hope you're listening.
I really hope they are. And I hope they announce... I mean, theoretically, they could announce tomorrow... Any day is fair game right now.
And hopefully sooner rather than later. Because, you know, they got to give people time to make their arrangements. Mm. They got to get out there, right? Early June.
Absolutely.
You think about it, you're like, oh, it's WWDCs in June. That's like, it's only March now and WWDCs in June. That's so long away. But you know what? It's the end of March and WWDC had better be at the very beginning of June. So it's not that long. It really isn't.
It's only, I mean, two months and some change. Some pocket change. You couldn't even buy a Tic Tac with the amount of pocket
change. That's
right.
That's right.
In fact, you could count the weeks from tomorrow. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 weeks. It's only 10 weeks, Noah. You got to give people enough time for other announcements to accompany it. They got to get there.
Yeah, exactly. Like 10 weeks. You have 10 weeks to book a flight and get a hotel. That's like, yeah. That's crazy. I could never do that. I need at least 52 weeks to plan any kind of trip.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, what if I'm planning on getting a cat on June 4th and this completely ruins the whole thing? Like, how am I going to be giving my care and time to Whiskers if now all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, now I gotta go do WWDC stuff.
That's right. You know, people are going to be making their plans, and if Dub Dub wants to be in there, they gotta let people know.
Absolutely, because if I'm picking between Whiskers and Dub Dub, that's a hard choice.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, gosh. You know what's another fun fact about WWDC?
What's that?
They've only... The 2022 was the first WWDC held at Apple Park.
Really?
Yeah. According to this, even though the Steve Jobs Theater was open and hosted some events before COVID, the WWDC wasn't there.
Hmm. It was... Where was it? It was in San Jose, right? Convention Center?
Yeah, the San Jose Convention Center... Well, before 2017, it was at Moscone Center.
Okay.
For like 15 years. But they did the San Jose Convention Center from 2017 to 2019, and then it went digital.
Right. That is... That's weird. Huh. It seems like Apple would want to use... Like, if they're spending all this money and effort to, like, build these nice facilities on Apple Park... And then they can use them for free, right? Because they own them. It's like you'd think and you'd hope that they're going to do at Dub Dub. Do Dub Dub at Apple.
Not to mention... Exactly. And not to mention that, like, if you're, let's say, announcing a super top secret VR mixed reality headset, just as a random off the top of my head example, if you did want to host an event revealing that, and you had to do all of your rehearsals and setup and all this stuff at a third-party location, one would imagine that would make it harder to do that versus just putting it in your own campus, in your own theater, that no one can get to until you send them in there.
That's very true. I definitely think that we could see and interesting discussion going on in the chat a little bit. So I definitely think that and hope that we'll see it at Apple Park. Think that would be very cool. But then there's also the discussion about like live event versus pre-recorded events. Right. What do you think about that?
So E Uploads here said, I think it'll be like last year, to be honest, pre-recorded with developers watching at Apple Park. I think that's probably the safe bet. And it kind of brings up the question, you know, when, if ever, does Apple return to normal live in-person events? Is that ever going to come back? Or are they just like, we can just pre-record them. They're better quality, more engaging. We can change stuff last minute. Like, do they just keep doing this ad infinitum or do they go back?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think, personally, so we had this discussion at one of the previous Apple events about the theory. First of all, I don't know if they're ever going to go back to the fully live events like they did before. And we had this discussion before. Those events were a lot slower paced. There was a lot of, like, you know, they would always, like, bring the other developers up to, like, present their stuff and talk. And there was, like, lots of dead airtime and, like... parts that people didn't care about, you know, whatever. I don't know if that's ever going to come back, but there's the possibility of like a hybrid sort of approach where part of it is, you know, if they're bringing all these people in person together, maybe part of the show can be presented live. Maybe even it's just the beginning and the mm-hmm. end could be live in front of those people, so you can see the crowds and you get some amount of, you know, live activity, and then the rest of it's pre-recorded. Because I think that for the actual products and like the demos, the pre-recorded stuff is just easier for them, for Apple, and for us it's, you know, more fast-paced, more engaging, you know, more straightforward.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I guess another thing we have to consider is that the audience for DubDub is typically there for several days, and the actual announcement is like the kickoff of the event, and the actual developers that go there for the conference, hence the name, are there in person for workshops, hands-on, and like if they do announce the M3 chip or the VR headset, they'd be able to get first party tutorials and training and knowledge and seminars from Apple on how to make apps and make stuff work for it. So all of that could still be done as they did last year with a pre-recorded event. So personally, I'm leaning towards, I think I agree with e-uploads. I think it's going to be the same as last year, which I honestly prefer, because to your point, Noah, those in-person events could get pretty dry. They, you know, I don't really need Tim Cook to come out and tell me about the latest retail store in a city I don't live in, all right? I don't care that much.
Yeah, and I definitely think, like, it's just easier for Apple. They can do, you know, they never have to worry about a demo going wrong. We've remembered some demos have gone wrong in the past. I'm remembering, like, the Face ID demo, right, where Craig went to pick up the phone and it, like, made him type in his password or whatever. There's, like, you know, all those little...
Oh, you I don't remember that.
It was, like, the iPhone 10.
No, wait, when was that?
Wasn't it the iPhone 10? They were showing off Face ID. And I think it was Craig or it was someone who, like, went to pick up the iPhone and the Face ID, you know when you try Face ID for a few times and it fails and it makes you type in the password? It, like, did that. And then he, like, made a little joke about it. And people were theorizing, like, why that happened. Like, someone, whoever set it up, accidentally triggered it. You don't remember this?
Oh, my God, you're right. Hang on. So, I don't remember this at all,
really?
But September 13th, 2017, MacRumors wrote an article on this. During an iPhone 10 demo conducted by Craig Federighi, you're right, Face ID appeared to fail to recognize his face, leading to doubts about the feature's reliability and accuracy. Some people... I guess their official answer was that other people on stage had been handling the phone. So it's like, you know, when you, like, mess up Face ID a couple of times, it makes you put in the password. I guess people think it was that. But yeah, I mean, your point more so being that you don't have blunders like that that make people then think the feature doesn't work, and then you have to go and do PR to say, like, oh, it's not the feature doesn't work, it's that someone else touched the demo phone. You have control over that with the events.
Exactly. So you have full control over all the demos. You know they're always going to work, obviously, because they're pre-recorded. And then they can do little things like whatever, those Macs that launched back in January. They pulled that little piece of the event right out of the event and just aired that part later. So they can do things like that. They can, you know, pull things out, reorder things, move things around, because it's just
right.
A video. They don't have to worry about, like, the order of the speakers and, like, you know, where the, you know, different things are going to happen, like, whatever. It's just, you know, very easy for them. It's locked in even before the event happens.
I also suspect that it's a lot faster to film because they don't have to do rehearsals. I know that with the traditional events, they have to do days and days of rehearsals. You know, the timing and getting everyone on stage and, like, they got to get the third-party developers that are going to do their, like, little boring plug. They have to come in. Like, it's a big operation. It's like putting on a play. You don't really have to do that because with the not-in-person events, they can record on different days and times. You can take as many tries as you want. They probably have a teleprompter, so it probably doesn't take all that many takes to do what they're doing. Granted, it is almost certainly a lot more work for their like CGI team because there's a lot more graphics in these events. But again, you also have a lot of time to work on that because you're not doing it live.
Exactly. It just you know, it goes down to, you know, eUploads is saying in the chat, Apple likes control and they get the most control with pre-recorded events. It's absolutely true. They get full control over exactly what's going to happen because at the end of the day, they're just hitting play on a video that they already set up. It just makes a lot of sense. And it's better. It's better for, like, we've already discussed this, but I think that those events are better.
Yeah.
They're fast paced. So they're more engaging. And I don't think Apple will ever. I would like to see. I think it would be really cool if at the very beginning and the very end, it was Tim Cook on stage in front of all the people. And he did the live, like, good morning, and then everyone's clapping. They get the drone shot. They show all the developers. And then they're like, you know, here's what we're going to show you today. And then it plays through the entire video. I feel like that would be a cool way to get a little bit of the live flair in there. I don't think they're actually going to do that. But anything beyond that, I don't think is really necessary. I think the pre-recorded is just good.
It's kind of ironic because Steve Jobs Theater is kind of pointless now. I mean, I guess theoretically every year they're like top tier media and developers go into Steve Jobs Theater to like watch. Like that's what they did last year, I think. At least some of the developers went in Steve Jobs Theater and watched it in there. Others were watching it outside or like in the cafeteria or like in some weird little corner. Like they had a bunch of different areas, but it is kind of funny because they spent ridiculous amounts of money. I mean, the whole like top part of the Steve Jobs Theater is glass that is actually structural and it supports the roof. And they had to run all the wires as like fiber optic things through the seams in the glass for the lights in the ceiling, and like the theater itself, they probably spent well north of $100 million on it, and they only used it for like 2 years. They never used it for Dub Dub, and then now it's just kind of pointless.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they get some other use out of it. I don't know if they have like other events that they hold in there or whatever, but like you'd think that the biggest event. Arguably the biggest event, you could argue with the iPhone event or like the Max or whatever, but like Dub Dub is kind of like the event, I feel like. And I don't know, for that to not use the Steve Jobs Theater, or at least not use it like as an actual like presentation theater, it is kind of funny.
Right. I mean, I guess they have used the theater in the pre-recorded stuff, like the iPad Pro M1 chip, I think. They had like a whole segment that they did on the stage.
Right.
I think for the iPhone 12 they did as well. Like they've used it for bits and pieces, but certainly not to the degree that it was built for, which was literally just built for like, this is where we're going to do the keynotes. Media is going to sit here. We're going to announce stuff. And this is built, purpose built for that. And now they're just like, oh, well, I guess we just threw that money away.
Oops. Yeah, maybe. It is kind of funny. But, you know, we're getting better events. So I would say it's a win for us.
This event might be one of the best if reports are to be believed.
That's true. I'm talking about VR headset. We're talking about M3. Yeah. We're talking about new updates, software updates. Most exciting part.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, no, I'm most excited for watchOS 9,
10,
10, whatever number we're on.
I think 10.
10. Wait. How are we on watchOS 10? if the Apple Watch came out in 2015.
No, I think we're on 9 right now, so 10 would be the next one.
Wait, but that's still... I feel like the math doesn't track. It launched in April 2015. That would have been watchOS 1. Right. That lasted until 2016. Then watchOS 2 until 2017. 3 until 2018. 4 until 2019. Wait, I'm confused. Either way, it hasn't been 10 years. How would we... Isn't it on... Hang on, are we dumb?
It is 9. I'm almost positive it's watchOS 9.
WatchOS. I'm going on Apple.com. Yeah, we are on 9. You're right. How? How do we do...
So people are saying watchOS 2 came out in 2015, so maybe there was like a shorter gap in the updates.
They skipped a year? Some people are like, they called a watch a Series 0. If anything, that would go the other way.
Yeah, that was about the hardware, that the original Apple Watch was called the Series 0.
Yeah.
This is about the software. But maybe there were two updates in the same year or something. I don't know.
That's weird. Wait, why did they do that?
I don't know. This is some Apple Watch history.
I'm going on the Wikipedia page. WatchOS. Oh, everyone's wrong. They're wrong. They're all wrong.
They're wrong.
Yeah, get owned. Look at this. Everyone's like, eh, WatchOS 2 came out in 2015. Oh, WatchOS 2 was 2015. No, it wasn't. According to Wikipedia here, WatchOS 1 came out May 19th, 2015. WatchOS 2, July 18th, 2016. WatchOS 3, July 2017. 4, 2018. 5, 2020?
Wait, what are you looking at? Oh, I see. You're looking at...
Wait.
No, that's the most recent version. That's like version 5.3.9, not 5.0.0.
Wait, why would they...
If you look at...
Why would they make a chart
Look at
like
the
this?
Very top of the of this article. So it says version 1 was April 24th, and version 2 was actually September of 2015.
I was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, this chart on Wikipedia is confusing, but it seems like there were actually two versions in 2015.
That is a really confusing... Oh, gosh. Okay, wait. So watchOS 1... I still don't get how this happened here. Because WatchOS 4 came out in 2017.
Right.
WatchOS 5 came out in 2018. WatchOS 6 came out in 2019. 7 came out in 2020. I mean, I guess that makes sense. If you double up.
Yeah, they had doubles of the 2015 release.
You're right. Gosh, I just had a brain fart there. Anyway, that's what I'm most excited for. Just kidding. Psych. It's the headset. And for some reason, lately we're getting like all of this, like people are like dumping water on the fire.
Hmm.
Everyone is trying to like say that what was the big one today? The big one today was that some Apple employees are seriously concerned about mixed reality headset as announcement draws closer.
I heard about that one.
Supposedly, according to the New York Times, initial enthusiasm has become skepticism within Apple. According to 8 current and former employees, apparently there's a lot of concern about the new product. Gosh, I don't know. Apparently, it has not been driven by the same clarity as Apple's other projects. That, to me, does sound like a bad sign. Some Apple employees have defected from the project due to doubts about its potential. Others have been fired over lack of progress with some of the device's functionality, including Siri. oh God, is this thing going to be very dependent on Siri? Because if that's the case, then prepare to bury it alive because Siri is dumb.
I didn't even think about that. Because we had that discussion about, like, how are you even going to input into this thing? But what if it's, like, Siri? That's not good.
I'm having a panic attack, Noah. What if this thing is reliant on Siri to do a lot of things? Siri's so dumb.
It really... See, I feel like this could be a whole discussion right here with all of the crazy stuff going on with AI these days. Like, Siri's just been asleep at the wheel. Siri's been sleeping on the red-eye flight for these past couple years, at least.
Absolutely. Somebody needs to wake Siri up and be like, hey, what are you doing? Dude, I can't even get Siri to, like, figure out a simple, very simple command. All right, are you ready? I'm going to demonstrate this right now. Remember we talked about how I have these Philips Hue bulbs, which I regret because they were too expensive. But one of the reasons I got them was so that it would be tied into HomeKit. But it's so hit or miss. It just doesn't work. Like, If I were to tell you, Noah, let's imagine that you're a virtual assistant, okay? Put yourself in the shoes of Siri, Bixby, Google, Bing, whatever you want to be.
Okay, Luke, how can I help you today?
Okay?
Boop, boop.
Hey, Noah, turn the lights off.
Turning the lights off. And then I would just turn all the lights off.
All the lights, right?
Yeah.
Shall we see what Siri does if I try
sure.
to do this?
Let's see it.
Hopefully you guys will be able to hear this, but hey Siri, turn the lights off.
Okay. Which room? Living room or bedroom?
Both. All right, so two things. Thing one, why if I say turn the lights off, that shouldn't be a two-step thing. Like, I don't know. Personally, I think if you're saying turn the lights off, the implication is all of them.
Yeah.
Or it could be smart enough to be like, whatever room you're currently in, like, zero intelligence is happening there.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing is, it didn't turn all the lights off. There's still lights on behind me.
Are those also, like, controlled by Siri?
Yes.
And it didn't turn them off?
So it turns off the bulb lights, but any lights that are on a switch, Siri doesn't think that they're lights.
Oh, I see.
Which is really frustrating because, like, so if I go back and say, hey Siri, turn the lights on. Both.
Go ahead.
What do you mean, go ahead? You heard that, right?
Yeah.
Is there something else I can help with?
Yes, turn the lights on, please.
Okay. Which room? Bedroom or living room?
Both. Okay. What just happened? Why did it say go ahead? Like, sorry, are you still talking? Jesus Christ. Why did it say go ahead? Is that like a sassy thing? It's like, you turn the lights on, lazy
bitch.
That's
what it sounds like.
I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, geez, okay, I don't need backtalk, Siri. Like, gosh, it's bad enough that you don't know what turn the lights on or turn the lights off means. Like, bad. But now that we've got the lights back on, the way that you have to, the only way that Siri, as far as I can tell, will actually go from this state to turning the lights off is a two-stage process whereby I say, hey Siri, dark mode. So now, because I have it preset and it doesn't use any of those outlets, those are now off. And then if I say, hey Siri, turn living room lights off, now it turns them off.
Huh. It's annoying.
Terrible. Terrible.
I saw some, I think it was a tweet or something that was like, I believe that Siri is just one file with 15,000 if statements in it. And honestly, I could believe that.
I believe it too. I mean, for the love of Christ, Steve, Mac84 here with the very helpful and true thing of setting up a shortcut. And that's absolutely how you can do it. You can get around all of these things if you set up shortcuts. But holy crap, is that bad of like a digital assistant to be so dumb that you have to literally program what you want it to do in order for it to do anything useful?
Yeah, especially when you compare that, like these days, you compare that to like ChatGPT, even like Bing and Bard, like any of these AI chatbots or whatever that are so smart, and even that they can like they can understand things that are, what's the word that I'm trying to say? Things that are ambiguous, that's the word. Or they can have context right. And memory. So like when you told Siri to turn the lights off and she said, you know, go on or whatever, like she was confused, and then you asked again and you had to specify both rooms a second time. That's like a very basic thing that you know, one of these chatbots or whatever would remember that you asked for it the first time. Maybe they get confused, but they would remember what you were asking for. And then you could say, you know, try again, for example. And it would remember, oh, I should try that thing that I just did. And it would understand that in a way that Siri never would.
That's a really good point. Siri is static, right? Apart from shortcuts, there's no way to interact and to teach it to do anything. And I'm pretty sure most things it still can't actually just like pull from the internet. Like if I say like how many years do cats typically live for?
Here's what I found from Wikipedia. Cats usually live for 13 to 20 years.
Like it still is just taking the first Google result, and I mean, at the very least, for some things, it does read like the Google Knowledge Graph, which is the absolute bare minimum of what a virtual assistant should be able to do. It's not really putting it in natural language. It literally, no matter what you ask it, it's either going to say, here's what I found from Wikipedia, and then just read that excerpt. Or it's going to say, here's what I found on the web, and just literally take your voice and paste it into a Google search. In 2023, that's where Siri is still. Like, that's literally 2011 stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally what it was doing when Siri was first announced on the iPhone 4S. And there was something else I was gonna say about that Siri. I think the way that you phrased it, you know, Siri being static and the idea that you can't teach it things. The thing I was going to say is Siri very much reminds me of like a command line interface for any of the programmers out there, or maybe like those old games. You know those old games that were all text-based and they were like, you are in a forest and you say, go north. And it's like, you see a tree and then you say, climb tree. Like, that's basically what Siri is. Like, you give these very simple, almost context-free commands, like you were saying. You know, it's very much like a process. Like, Siri doesn't remember things. It doesn't really know you any more than it knows like the structured data that you have, like the information in your contact. If you say, you know, call my mother, it looks up in the contacts, you know, what context has an association of your contact of mother, because that's something you can do, and then it would know how to do that. It doesn't like know things or understand or learn or remember or anything like that, and that's really the limitation when you compare it to things that we have now.
Yeah, no, that's, I think that's a really, really good analogy. It's exactly like one of those text adventure games. Like, there are very specific things that you have to say for it to actually understand you. And all of the replies are canned, basically. Like, the only thing that it's even... the most intelligent that it's doing is text-to-speech off of Google.
Yeah, it's very basic. And we'll go back to DubDub, because maybe we could see, you know, a new Siri, some Siri improvements at DubDub. But the last thing, every time Siri comes up, I have to say it, is Siri does not work for, like, bilingual people. And that's a problem. I literally never use Siri because, you know, my phone's in Spanish. And I'm happy to talk to Siri in Spanish, but anytime I need to cross over to English to say the name of a place or the name of a person or anything else, like if I ever wanted to tell Siri to call you, I would have to pronounce your name as like Luke Miani, because that's like how you would pronounce it in Spanish. Oh, I can't say like llamar a Luke Miani, because it's not going to understand that. I got to say Luke Miani, like I'm pronouncing your... whatever. It doesn't work for bilingual people.
Wait. Can we get a demo of this?
You know, maybe if I were to... we can try it. Let's see if it works. It might work for your name. There might be other names where it's less works with. But I guess we can try it. Let me see.
I'm curious.
Yama Luke Miani... Okay, you know what? That time, to be fair, it did actually get your name. I think it does all right, maybe with names sometimes. I think it's the names of like places. Like if I wanted to navigate to some store or like a place in Apple Maps or whatever, it's not going to understand
right
how to cross between those two. Or if I want to send a message to you, like if I wanted to ask Siri to text you, I would have to text you in Spanish. I can't like mid sentence switch to English, or even tell Siri like text Luke in English, whatever. Wait. Whatever.
So you cannot use Siri.
Oh, hang on.
To send a message.
Sorry, I missed that.
Wait, so you can't use Siri to hang send on. Text messages at all? Uh-oh, I think Noah
okay,
cannot
I'm
hear.
Back. My these headphones got confused when I tried to use my phone to talk to Siri.
Oh, no. So, wait. Here's my question. Can you not use Siri at all to send text messages?
I could use it to send... You know, okay, let's be fair. I haven't actually tried doing it. So, should I try to... I'll try to send a message to you in English,
yeah.
And let's see what happens. Hopefully my...
Yeah, and give it a decently complex, like, you know, give it something to really test okay. It.
Envía un mensaje a Luke Miani diciendo, hello, how are you doing today?
Well, that's not very complex.
Well, it said, how are you? That's what it got out of that.
So it just missed half of the sentence?
Yeah. It got a general... I guess it got the general idea, but, like, it clearly didn't dictate what I was saying.
Well, try something with a little bit more, like, complex words and, like, a longer sentence.
Okay.
What time are we going to... plan for the next episode of the podcast? Something like that. That's got a little bit more okay. to it.
Envío un mensaje de texto a Luke Miani diciendo, what time are we going to plan to do the next episode of the Dark Mode podcast?
Okay, that's
says,
good.
I don't see an app for that. You'll have to download one.
Oh my God. That's terrible.
I don't know. I don't know why I didn't recognize that at all, but it just doesn't work. And for someone asked, like, why would you tell Siri to send a text in Spanish and then send the text in English? The reason is because my phone is set in Spanish. I set it in Spanish. I set all my stuff in Spanish to practice, but all of my friends speak English. So it's like, I have to manually, I could set Siri to English if I wanted to use it to text other people or whatever. I could do that. But, like, there are plenty of people who are actually bilingual, like people who speak both languages regularly in their day-to-day life.
Yeah.
I don't mean to derail the podcast because I know this is kind of getting derailed, you know, pretty far. But, like...
No, I mean, I think it's valid.
Like, there are people who, like, who speak bilingually, like, every day. They speak to some people in Spanish or and some people in English or other languages, whatever. And, like, Siri cannot handle that. Meanwhile, I think the chatbots, like, I've tried a little bit with ChatGPT or Bard or Bing or whatever. Like, you can talk to them in, you know, if you talk to it in Spanish, it'll respond to you in Spanish. If you talk to it in English, it'll respond in English. Like, they seem to have a much better job of, you know, handling these things. They do a much better job of doing these things.
And you don't have to set it. Because, like, theoretically, I mean, to your point, in a lot of situations, bilingual people, like, are gonna just naturally switch back and forth plenty of times. Like, there are plenty of people that I went to school with were, like, Chinese or Japanese transfer students or abroad. What's the term?
The study abroad people? Students?
Sure. Something like that. Like, there'd be plenty of people that spoke perfectly good fluent English, but their phone is in their native language, whether it be, you know, Chinese or Spanish or Italian or whatnot. And, like, that's pretty bad if you would have to, you know, change the language of Siri just so that you can use it to text your friends, or at least your English friends. Like, there's probably, if you're a bilingual person or you're studying abroad, chances are, you know, you're gonna have your native language and friends that speak that language, and you're also gonna have friends speaking that other language. And Siri's just like, well, too bad. Can it even, wait a minute, here's a question. Mm-hmm. I'm going to send you a text. Can it read the text?
Oh, yeah. You should do that because it's kind of funny. And we'll see if it
okay,
does.
I'm going to send, this is an example message. Let's see if Siri is smart enough to figure it out. Okay. So I'm going to send you that message, and then we'll have Spanish Siri read
okay,
it.
Okay, let me see.
This is interesting.
Lee el mensaje de Luke Miani.
Luke te envió un mensaje nuevo. This is an example message. Let's see if Siri is smart enough to figure it out. ¿Quieres enviar una respuesta?
You know, it's understandable.
I mean, so that's actually very interesting. So why did it use, like, a very, very heavy accent?
Well, I think Siri doesn't look at that and, like, Siri doesn't understand what language the thing is in. Siri is in, like...
It's pronouncing it
as if it were in Spanish.
A Spanish
It's pronouncing
way.
It as if it were written in right. Spanish. Exactly.
That... golly. This is... I mean... I know you said that we're derailing the podcast, and that's probably partially true, but this is actually quite relevant. I mean, this is the space that we're competing in now, where you can go to you can go on Bard. Well, maybe not Bard. Bard's a little bit, no offense, Google employee, but you can go on Bing, which is fully ChatGPT integrated, and you can say, like, hey, tell me about something. Or you could say, hey, generate an image of something. Or, like, it's much more versatile. Now, I don't necessarily think that Apple should just, you know, plug ChatGPT into Siri, because, as we all know, there are plenty of issues with accuracy and fact-checking, making up sources. Like, large language models definitely have their issues. But if you were to, I guess, rephrase it, like, right, Siri isn't a search engine. So you could almost completely ignore all of those problems, because none of that is relevant to what Siri's job is. And in fact, Siri could still, if there was, like, a ChatGPT Siri that's underpinning this whole headset and the way that you interact with it, because there's no physical touch apart from gestures, which are probably also AI machine learning based. This AI Siri could still just use Google searches and then just put it into natural language without like making up facts and still be perfectly good as Siri and not be listening to everything that I'm saying just because I said its name. Go away.
Yeah.
I'm going to lose my mind.
I definitely think... Here's the thing. A mixed reality or virtual reality headset that is powered by AI, like natural language interaction, sounds like such a cool idea, right? Because we were talking about, like, how do you control it? Do you use your phone as a remote? Are there like buttons or gestures on the watches or the watches on the glasses or whatever? Like, how do you control it? Those things could exist, but like, if there's a way to control it naturally and to be able to say, like, you know, open this app, move it over there, make it bigger, like whatever, like describing these things in natural language and having them happen, that would be so powerful. But if it's going to be Apple and Siri that's providing that feature, then I'm definitely concerned. Unless Apple has been secretly working on like an LLM based Siri, like a true AI better version of Siri, but you know, I guess we can't know.
Gosh. I really don't know. I really don't know. And I think this is very relevant to this WWDC discussion, because Apple needs to have a response to this. Siri is simply like, I mean, it's been a joke that Siri's bad for a long time. I don't think that's really new, but it's just like Siri just hasn't advanced at all in, gosh, it's got years. Like, I personally don't know. Like, okay, they made Siri sound more natural. I want to say that was like an iOS 10 or 11 thing.
Something like that.
The new Siri voice. I don't remember when that came out. But it didn't really change, like, how dumb Siri was.
Yeah. It was cool. Like, it was kind of cool when it first came out. I remember even because, like, Siri was originally an app that Apple bought. And I remember that I used the original Siri app from whatever company made it before Apple bought it, because I thought I was so cool because I had like an iPhone 4 and like the Siri like built into iOS was only available on the 4S. But like I had the Siri app on my iPhone 4. So I was like, ooh, I have Siri on my iPhone 4. And obviously Apple shut it down after they acquired it. But like since then, yeah, the voice has gotten better. They've added some, like, more commands, maybe, more integrations, maybe. But, like, I think to your point, you know, you said people have always joked about Siri being bad. Siri has always been bad. But recently, this explosion of, like, AI and you know, large language models, ChatGPT, whatever, like, this explosion has made it clear just how bad Siri is, or more, you know, accurately, just how good it could be, but isn't.
Mm. Absolutely. I think that's exactly right. It's just kind of showing us how inadequate Siri is right now to an even greater degree. And that becomes all the more alarming in the context of a new products category coming out. Now, personally, I do have hopes that the headset will... I mean, obviously, it's going to be a first-gen product, and it's not going to be perfect and polished and ready for the mainstream, but I hope that it's good enough that we can really see a vision and a potential. Because it seems like the reporting here is effectively saying, you know, it might just straight up not be super compelling yet.
Right. Yeah, there's so many mysteries surrounding this headset. See, it's interesting because like we've had discussions about this headset before on the podcast, but like there are so many mysteries that like today we were talking about like What if it's powered by Siri? And that's a whole discussion of like, just like, how do you interact with it? And we've discussed that before. But even just within that subtopic, the sub-subtopic of like, how is Siri? Because you know there's going to be Siri on this thing, even if it's not the primary means of interaction. Like, Apple has Siri on all of their products. So you know Siri is going to be here somehow. And then exactly. The question is, how is Siri going to work? And that's a whole discussion. There's, like, so many interesting... You could have, like, the Apple VR headset podcast, and you could talk about a different question every week, and you could fill an hour doing that. And it's kind of interesting. Just so much unknown, so much potential.
Absolutely. Gosh, I mean, everything gets more and more complicated. You know, it used to be like, hey, we like music. What if music was lots of songs instead of just five? And then they were like, hey, what if phone plus music plus web? And I was like, hey, what if bigger phone / hybrid computer? Or, oh, what if computer thinner or faster? Like, this is so much more abstract. It's not a clear answer to an unclear question. I think it is a very arbitrary answer to a question that is maybe being asked by some people, but other people don't even know if they want this at all. Oh, gosh. I don't know. I think Apple's treading into some uncharted waters here, which I guess is the point. You know, innovation, they're going to have to take a stab in the dark. But I'm nervously excited to see what they have come up with.
Me too. And I'm hoping that we see it at DubDub. And I'm hoping, to tie it all back together, that DubDub is announced very soon. Maybe even this week.
Hopefully this week. And in fact, I think we have now filled an hour, to your previous point.
That's right.
A very full one, in fact. We've gone slightly over. And, I mean, realistically, there's only one thing to do, which is announce the end of this episode of Dark Mode.
Very good.
Right. So I think we should just do that now. We're not going to make you guys, you know, we're not going to force you guys to CCRP this, all right? We're just going to come right out and say it. This episode of Dark Mode is over.
True.
That's not a leak. It's just the truth.
True.
The rumors are true. Absolutely. I need to go into sleep mode or else I'm gonna die.
Yes, we're gonna get you nice and tucked in now.
So I'll tuck right into this outro. I have been your host, Luke Miani.
I've been your host, Noah Rubin. We'll see you next week and have a great night.
Take care.